If getting to a million is the mile four times around the track, the first lap for me is getting out of delivery, is like the race to get out of delivery. Because fundamentally, you need to solve a sales and marketing problem.
Hey, podcast listener, even if you are alone in your entrepreneurial journey, know that today, right now in your earbuds, you are joined by thousands of entrepreneurs from all around the globe seeking to grow better, more profitable, location-independent businesses. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and download our entire back catalog, check out tropicalmba.com.
Happy Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome
back to the podcast. Welcome.
You look like a Caravaggio painting there. You've got like some nice mood lighting.
Oh, I thought you were going to comment on the fact that I'm still holding my microphone. You got this fancy arm and I got my real arm.
That's right. I'm reinvesting the profits back into the podcast.
I'm in Barcelona. I went down to Fnac, which is like their Best Buy. And yeah. I got me a 27-inch monitor for less than $100. I got me camera stand for less than $15.
It's incredible.
It is very incredible. I was looking at a map of like where products come from in Europe. And I guess a lot of them come from Germany. I guess it's like they're China. It's been a while since I've come to Barcelona and been a consumer in that way. But I thought I was going to come here and have to pay European prices for things. But it turns out they got their own little supply chain going on here. Still like Amazon, but not Amazon.
I'm going to get over my incredible FOMO about all the things you're doing in Barcelona. I don't even want to hear. I can't hear about it. I have to get moving on into the episode topic.
I'm sorry you can't be here. I will not tell you about all the nice ice cream and bike rides that I'm going on.
One of the milestones we talk a lot about at the podcast is $1 million in revenue. And one of the things we wanted to do today is toss out 10 ideas for businesses that are sub 1 million, that are seeking to get to that milestone and beyond, and talk about how they can help you get there. And so we wrote down 10 things. None of them are necessary. They're certainly not sufficient. You got to work hard and all that stuff. But if you're feeling a lack of confidence or maybe a little bit stuck, or you're looking for some ideas to change some things in order to get reliably on a path to 1 mil, which by the way, only 5% of businesses do. What we're going to do today is toss out some ideas that could be useful in that journey. So without further ado, we will talk about our top 10 ideas for getting to 1 million in revenue. All right. So the very first thing we were talking about before the call, besides gelato, we were talking about this business as a house metaphor, right? And where do you start? You start with the real estate and you start with the slab and you start with the raw materials and stuff. And so I want to toss out what would be the real estate or the slab, that very first thing that is perhaps most useful. And it's not going to be implementing traction. It's not going to be having custom logo t-shirts. Although these are nice things to have.
They are nice. Maybe not even the domain, but yeah, they are nice.
The number one thing that I'm going to look for if I'm not yet at a million is a product with tailwind. And I'm going to attempt to define tailwind. Of course, when you're on a bike, it feels a lot different when you're riding into the wind versus with that wind at your back. Some people call this product market fit, but there's some more elements to like what this tailwind could look like. A lot of products with a tailwind have a unique value proposition. They're significantly differentiated. You can ask yourself about the overall trend in the market. Are you riding a trend that's going up and to the right over time? Is it dynamic or is it static and deflationary? Is the air coming out of the market? Are you trying to swim upstream? There's like a good meme that's like real estate investors in X year or whatever. And it's like thought they were geniuses, but essentially their real estate holdings were tracking with the market. And the reality is small businesses do the same. So it's worth taking a step back and asking yourself, Are you doing something because you think it's like the right thing to do? Are you trying to save your market? Are you doing it for maybe a pride reason or a moral reason versus taking a peek at what do the people want? What is the market doing? Am I helping them to do what they want to do? Because then you'll make the profits that then you can do what you want to do. So sometimes as entrepreneurs, we're very creative. And we talked about the analogy of digging a well in the desert. We can get a little bit too clever versus taking a look at behavior that's out there in the marketplace and trying to get involved in a trend that's up and to the right. There's kind of a practical way you can do this is looking at a couple key stats. So what is your referral rate? If your customers aren't referring your product to other customers, you might not have a tailwind. And again, this is different from the market thing. This is about the product market fit. If your customers aren't like absolutely delighted and love spending money with your product, that's not a tailwind scenario.
Yeah. And what you described in at first there is important, which is I have a burning desire. I found your product. I love your product. That's the combo for referrals. It's not just I bought your product because I needed it. Of course, you're not going to tell anybody about it at that point, right? You're not that passionate about the product.
You know, we all have flexibility in terms of how we're framing up our products. So I was in a couple of client calls over the past few weeks. One of the things that came up is let's look at this product line. How many vitamins are there here versus how many pain pills? When you're in pain, you want that pain pill. You're not reaching for vitamin D complex or whatever. And so this is one way you can adjust product. You can look at rebuys. So one of the things that comes up in businesses that don't have a tailwind is that the customers don't rebuy the product. Some people overcorrect here and they say, there's not like a membership or like subscription element to my business. But what about just simply they buy something from you every quarter or every month? And if you're like, well, that's just not what my business does, that could be a problem for you because now you have to replace your entire clientele every 2 to 3 years. That is the definition of a headwind. And again, we're trying to like separate ourselves and look at our business from the top down and say, man, did I just ride my bike into the wind here? Turn this thing around. We have to find something that my customers are buying from me more regularly. Sounds overly simple to say it. It's like the simpler the thing, the harder it is to implement in some ways, because oftentimes we're committed to what we do. But I would encourage if you're listening to this right now and your customers don't rebuy from you often, that's hard to overcome. It's hard to get to 1 million if your customers aren't rebuying.
It's very hard to overcome because oftentimes sales and marketing can be one of the more expensive things in your operation as well.
That's right.
So if you have to go out there and drag it home every time and your customers aren't referring, you need to build that into your costs. You need to build that into your organization. And a lot of the ways that these businesses, sub-million Dan, get off the ground is through friends and family. I know a couple people. Hey, this lady told me I could build 3 websites for her. Okay, now I'm off the ground. I got my little agency going on. That's not sustainable. Those websites are done and dusted after you build them. No referrals are coming in. So what's next? You're going to have to go out and sell and market your product. That's expensive. And they're not rebuying. That's an issue.
So that's an opportunity to use that small agency as like a metal detector for treasure. And the treasure is what are problems, pains that those 3 clients have that they're willing to regularly pay for it. And then to expand it out into a concept of expansion revenue then. Say you now built your agency and you have like 25 customers and then you added a maintenance product, right? Where you're doing like audits and maintenance and that's what your clients love. They value it. They rebuy. Now, all of a sudden, we're looking for an expansion opportunity. If your clients aren't willing to spend, if you have like 25 clients and there's not like a reliable percentage of those clients who are super clients, that could be representative of a headwind as well, which is you're not developing passionate, loyal brand advocates who are willing to spend 10x what the average person in the ecosystem would be. You can look at simply your LTV to CAC ratio. That's a kind of a simple way to sum all of this up. How much does it cost me to acquire somebody? And if it's coming through personal relationships, can you quantify what it takes to reproduce that system? How much does it cost to build the relationship? How much time does it take? And then how much do I get out of the deal? And I think what you said in like the very small personal relationship agency scenario is like the problem with that is often no rebuys, of course. But then if you actually put money to like the process of getting those clients, then the LTV to CAC ratio doesn't work out when it's separated out from those relationships.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It totally does.
Because it could end up, one way to theoretically say, oh, I've built myself a job, is essentially my customer acquisition cost is too high.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no margin there. So that's why I have a job, because I have to be there to realize any profit from this system.
And honestly, Dan, most of the agencies that I've gotten to take a look at in the last few years have become just that, jobs for people. And this is maybe something for a different show, but the idea of the agency, a lot of agencies don't scale past $1 million for various reasons, some of which we've already talked about, and we will in the rest of the episode too. But the idea of a lot of these agencies could just be to be what you described before, which is a metal detector, some kind of sensor to suss out what a product is,
right,
that you could be selling, and to get yourself out of the delivery and out of this idea that you have to go acquire customers in this way that's like very expensive and face all this headwind, essentially.
Exactly. Okay, so we covered a product with a tailwind. So we're going to go through 10 things here, so I want to progress. But one of the things I wrote down just under product with tailwind is just being able to deliver with high quality. A lot of times when you're doing complicated projects for a lot of different people, it's hard to be above good. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of it's okay. And it's hard to get referrals and rebuys and expansion opportunities when it's okay. So the problem compounds itself, right? Because your costs are so high, you can't afford the great team, you're doing various amounts of work, your LTV to CAC's off.
The job isn't like the worst thing in the world. If you figure out how to make a couple $100,000,
no, you're on first base. You can score from first base. Yeah, totally.
And your agency, that's great. That's great. And what we're talking about here is like getting to a million. The problem in a lot of these agencies specifically is that they don't scale past a million. So you have to figure out something different to do. But the good news is while you're in, you're going to figure out something to do. Like literally when you're shoveling the, you will design a tool that makes shoveling easier.
A shovel. Yeah. That breaks down every year. So you have to buy it again.
Exactly.
No. You need to buy covers for the shovel so it doesn't smell when you store it in your garage.
Exactly.
And the covers are where you get them.
I just want to point out though that it's really important, number one, that you shovel because you know exactly what the problem is and you know who the customer is and you know what the solution is. You might not know what the ideal solution is because again, you're going to come in there with some heavy machinery, baby, but it doesn't make sense to design the heavy machinery before you've ever shoveled before. We've seen how that goes. It's like you design a contraption that nobody knows how to use and it doesn't actually solve the problem. So you got to get knee deep and then you got to shovel it yourself. And then hopefully you got to figure out a way to get out of that pit and design the equipment while you keep the operation running.
All right, let's move on to the next one. Have you ever heard of this phrase, crossing the Rubicon?
Yeah, sure.
Do you know where the Rubicon is? Because I just found out. I had no idea.
I would imagine some remote place in the Middle East, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, that's where I would guess too. It's actually in Italy. And Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon and it was provoking a war when he did so. There was some kind of contract in place that says, look, Julius, if you cross the Rubicon, the spears come out. And so the idea is that it's the point of no return. Hmm. And I feel like there's a sort of a Rubicon in a lot of businesses. And it's you're either before it or you're after it. And once you're after it, it just is a different business. And for me, it's getting out of delivery. I remember we talked about this a lot with our product business back in the day. It was the first hire we made. It's remarkable how many founders I see hiring for like smaller level tasks like around themselves and they stay in delivery.
Yep.
And it's probably more expensive. Like you can do more piecemeal type of hiring, mm-hmm. but that delivery hire might be more of an investment. And so it's scary to cross Rubicon because you know it's going to be a battle, especially in an agency context where you have a delta between I'm going to be making less money and I got to sell more to cover the capacity risk I'm bringing on by hiring for delivery.
Yep.
That's why it's beautiful to build agencies around, I sometimes call it like COGS-based labor. If you're selling labor that's contract and only gets billed when they work, that can be a more elegant way to scale a service business than one, obviously, where you have to take on overhead and then you always have to be selling and covering that cost. If getting to a million is the mile, four times around the track, the first lap for me is getting out of delivery, is like the race to get out of delivery. Because fundamentally, you need to solve a sales and marketing problem. You need to solve all the problems we talked about in point number one, the product with a tailwind. Like that's where you need to live with the metal detector, with the expansion revenue, with the rebuys, with the product ideas that change the economics.
Yep.
We simply cannot be spending the lion's share of our time on delivery. And I would say a good rule of thumb for early stage is you want to sprint to get out of delivery where you're spending less than 10 hours a week. And like ideally five. And that five is on training QC procedure with your delivery team.
Yep.
And then like important client problems. That's a Rubicon. It's a lap. It's a mile. I don't know.
It's important. It's the point. It's important because once you get out of delivery, hopefully you'll never go back until you come up with a new product or idea that needs you to be in delivery to figure it out and then hand it off. So first thing that happens a lot of times when you get out of delivery or when you try to get out of delivery, you go and hire somebody and you realize you don't have enough money. So what do you have there? You have a problem with your model. It means you're not charging enough or it costs too much to deliver it. So you find out early if you can get out of delivery. If you can't ever get out of delivery, then something is fundamentally broken with your model. Yep. So that's a good reason to get out of delivery. The other good reason to get out of delivery is it sucks selling something and then having to turn around and deliver it. It sucks. I've done it like a million times in my career. It's demotivating to sell someone a bunch of stuff and then know you have to deliver on it and then get on the next call and sell somebody a bunch of stuff and know that you then have to deliver it on it again.
Yeah, it's drinking from a fire hose. Yeah. Nobody wants to do that. Nobody, you want to drink the filtered water that's been processed through the system.
So getting out of the delivery early, Dan, like you said, is like crossing the Rubicon. If you've never done it before, once you do it, you're never going back because it feels so good.
100%. Next point. One key badass. It's a point that's come up. I think an important milestone on the path to 1 million is getting somebody in your office, in your virtual office, that's your badass. That's someone that you can trust, someone that's flexible, that shares your values, that is on the journey. It's very hard to get to $1 million without that badass. And we talked about how there's an identity shift sometimes in change involved. And it's comfortable to listen to your clients say what they want and you say you can do it. It's a different frame to be the type of person that a badass wants to work for. And it doesn't have to be a badass. It can be whatever your value set is. It could be someone incredibly conscientious and hardworking. However you want to frame up, you're starting to set the values of this company that's going to grow and why people would want to be involved. And a key moment to getting across that Rubicon, to getting to $1 million, is getting that first person in that's ready to go on the ride to a million with you.
Dan, I think that things have changed since we just started doing this a long time ago. Like we literally had a physical office, even though we had an e-commerce store. We had a physical office and we hired our first badass. It was a big deal. It was $30,000, $40,000 a year, whatever it was at the time. And so now with inflation, it's the cost of things got more expensive, but you don't actually pay people more. So that's the good news. Now it's $42,000 a year because, of course, you're going to offshore. I do think that companies have evolved to do fractional hiring, basically part-time specialists. This is like a trend that's been going on now for 5+ years. We do it ourselves in our organization. But I still believe that there is a ton of benefit in having basically mind share with someone in your organization that understands how your business works and can execute on the delivery at a high level. because this means that you can essentially step away from your business. So the model where you hire a bunch of contractors that all work like 5 hours a week or whatever it is, that works for some people. You are still squarely in the center of your operation for your business. This is the hub and spoke model. All the information has to go through you, and then it goes out into the spokes of the wheel, and then the product gets made or the product gets rolled in that metaphor. Once you hire this one key badass, you can essentially step out of that hub. You might still have a hub and spoke model, and that might not be the best thing in the long term to basically have the information choked down through the hub of the wheel, but at least then you can go off and figure out what your product is going to be, different business, sales and marketing, et cetera.
Yeah, that's a good image. When I think of this badass, the first thing I thought of was Swiss Army knife. But now you're saying hub, and that makes sense to me. You need a hub, the glue person to pull the whole thing together. And guess where you're at now? You're outside of the wheel and you're spinning that thing. That's where you need to be.
That's right.
That's how we get to a million. All right, we're moving on to the next one. Here's our next idea, Ian. In fact, a listener recently wrote to us and said, we did a whole episode about this topic that was boring. And he disregarded the topic until he circled back and was like, oh, shit, that is actually really important. I don't think I explained it well. The tool is simply cash flow mapping. And everybody's flipping off their Spotify's right now. Cash flow mapping is externalizing in a visual form what your business model looks like and what are the key numbers. So you're looking at the system, how money moves through it. Once you see it, now you're at A and it's easier to get to B, right? Now, this is how my system currently works. It feels like I have a job. I can't afford a badass, like all these problems. What does a business model look like, or what does a cash flow map look like that's viable? And that's simply it. I'm not going to explain the whole way how to do it. We're going to link to an exercise. We can track something down and put it in the links in the show notes. It's a simple and fun thing to do. Grab your whiteboard, grab your big artist tablet, and put down what your business model looks like and what are the key numbers. And that'll give us a baseline to evolve that sucker into something that can get past a million.
Dan, I talked to somebody the other day, large business, hadn't done this exercise. And I said, how do you know when to hire? How do you know when to invest? I don't know. At the end of the day, I just have a bunch of money. And so I feel like I can hire. And so I do. That is a rare business. That is also a business, though, that's probably behind the curve in terms of when they should be investing. Meaning, if they did have this cash flow mapping done, they could probably invest sooner and grow faster. But that's not the problem that most businesses have. Most businesses have a broken cash flow model or a broken business model, and they figure it out too late. So they're in the operations, they're trying to deliver the product, they're running out of money. This is a very simple exercise that you can do to figure out if you have a mousetrap that works.
I just got to go on this side point that you brought up on for me is like a common trait of entrepreneurs is you've got a model, but you haven't made it explicit.
Yeah.
And so how you invest your money tends to be either sloppy or speculative. And one of the real benefits of having a model is you can see where capital creates leverage in the model. So a lot of people have a much better model than they think, right? Mm-hmm. Except they're underinvested in it. They don't see the leverage. And so now all of a sudden I'm doing this thing. I hired this person to do this thing. But then you see the model and you're like, look at how people come in through the door. We're not even spending money on that. And now you see the model and you can invest in it. So there you go. Cash flow mapping. Check the show notes for links. The next thing that will potentially help you get to $1 million is just knowing all your numbers. Reliably knowing the important numbers in your business. So this doesn't necessarily mean you have the best books in the world, because in the early phases, if all of your financials are completely buttoned up, that can be okay. However, when we look at that cash flow map, you really would benefit from knowing these numbers. I think sometimes when I'm in a coaching call, it's almost like a barrage. Like the only way we can talk about this business is if we know the numbers,
yeah,
right? We did our executive review yesterday and it was like, what's the number for this? What's the number for this? What's the number for this? We did that for an hour and a half. We didn't even talk about any strategy. And then we sent off emails to all these people in the company bringing in all this information. In order to move forward, to evolve the business to the next level, we need to know what point A is. And so if you don't have a dashboard of the key numbers in your business and you're sticking your thumb in the soup and making intuitive decisions, your intuition is going to get a lot better if it's informed by numbers. You can still be brave. You can still be bold. You can still take a flyer. But for me, man, it's just so much easier to get to a million if you understand the key metrics in your business.
I was on one of these coaching calls with a new DC Accelerator member, Dan. Really impressive dude and impressive business, and started to dig into the numbers, right? So I was like, how many calls? What's the conversion on the calls? How many people are going to that page? He had every single number in the business, every single number in the business. And you know what it did? We would go down a cul-de-sac. We would realize it's a dead end, not knowing that it was a cul-de-sac when we started to go down it. And then we'd come right back up. And it was like 5 minutes. Right. And then we go down another street and then we come right back up. And it was like dead end there. Okay, let's figure out how to get out of this maze. And having those numbers made that call go by so much faster. And a lot of times, that is literally years of discovery. If you don't have these numbers, years of discovery. He is cut off because he understands his numbers and he understands what paths not to go down.
I don't know. There's like half of the audience who's like, duh. And there's half the audience that genuinely don't do this.
Yeah.
And it's why we bring it up. A lot of people have great opportunities in front of them and they just don't know all the numbers related to it. If you're in that side of the aisle, it makes it so much easier to be accountable, to make innovations, to get third-party help. And like you said, to just accelerate the whole process. So the best time is now to dig into what all these numbers are. Guess what? When you know a number, number can go up. And that's what we're trying to achieve.
Entrepreneurship, Dan, for me, is smelling the cheese. Business ownership is understanding the financial model or building a financial contraption.
Oh, I thought you were going to say cutting the cheese. What is smelling the cheese?
It's sniffing out the opportunities, right? It's having an idea of where the money might be. And then you start to get into business ownership.
I see.
And you start to rely on the numbers. That is business ownership. Relying on the numbers, understanding the numbers, knowing the numbers, manipulating the numbers. Now you own a financial instrument. Different in my mind than 0 to 1.
Got you. And agree. Let's move on to the next one. A resonant offer. Does a great offer sit at the core of your business? Here is the problem we solve. Here is the unique way in which we solve it. Here's what you can do to solve it with us. And here's, by the way, why we're great at it for solving these problems for people like you. There are a lot of people making a living through entrepreneurship that do not have a resonant offer, an undeniable offer, a 10x offer, the sort of offer that someone pays $500 and they feel like they got $5,000. If you can create that in your business, it is a wonderful tool to help you get to $1 million in revenue. Part of the reason I'm bringing it up is it comes up so much because you can really make a living without a really clear core offer that converts outside of vis-a-vis cold outreach campaigns, vis-a-vis SEO, ad campaigns, and other things. They're not necessarily that complicated to create. I just laid out one offer format just off the top of my head. There's a lot of offer formats that when your ICP, your prospect looks at it, they're like, damn, why can't your business have something that's, dang, I would be dumb not to do that. Now, you might be saying, well, I do $30,000 consulting gigs and it's hard to frame that up. Here's my retort to that. Move where the offer sits in your business. So what if instead of the $30,000 deal, what became ridiculous is that they wouldn't get on a call with you? Because if they fill out your diagnostic, they read your value proposition, hey, 15 minutes on the phone with me, we're going to knock this stuff out, right? Now you're demonstrating value. You're delivering them an undeniable deal. It's just a phone call and here's what they get. Or it's just an email address and then here's what they get. This actually is a very powerful tool. If you're thinking, what's my undeniable offer? Maybe you can make it revolve around some sort of lead generation. All they do is give you contact, whether it's telephone number, email, and you are giving them something that's legitimately incredible for that trade, something that people would pay for. Typically, you're giving it for free. This is a great way you can employ this tool of a resonant offer to build your ecosystem, to build the number of leads that you have, and to accelerate your path to a million.
I think there is some crossover, Dan, between resident offer and product too. I don't think you necessarily like need to have the craziest best product either. You just need to have a great offer. Mm-hmm. Somehow get people in the door. Like your product on the back end might not look that much different than other people. You're American, obviously. You're a new dad now too. I would assume you're a consumer of grills. This is going to be your weekend hobby at this point, is like grilling.
You ain't lying, bro. Big time into it.
Of course, right? So you look at a product like this Blackstone, it's a grill with a flat piece of metal on the top of it. And all of a sudden now you can you can supposedly cook hamburgers better, pancakes, like everything cooks better on it. Smash burgers, all this stuff, right? You go over to your friend's house now, you see the Blackstone, you're like, wow.
Incredible.
That is an amazing offer. Yes, it's a grill. We all still have grills. I have just simply put a piece of metal on the top of it. But there is something about that offer that makes you and all your friends go out and buy it.
I love your point here, which is if you're really focused on this core offer, you make tweaks to it and the product can adjust on the backside. And if everybody just wants a piece of sheet metal on the top of their grill, guess what? We're doing it because our COGS, like the whole ecosystem, the cash flow map, we have all the other things. And now we have an offer that resonates.
Yep.
Here's another application of this that's sort of interesting, especially with services businesses. You see a lot of like portfolio websites, right? Like we do this, we're great people. There's all this stuff going on. This is an opportunity to employ an offer. What do you want people to do when they come to your website? We want them to become the best customers. And so it's like, we're going to tell them all this stuff. And it's like, what's the first step? Typically, we got to talk to them. So what is your website selling actually? Oh, it's selling the ecosystem, our reputation, blah, blah, blah. Well, what if your website sold the call? And now we can really drive it into, if people have to talk to our sales team before they buy, why are we selling them the product? Why don't we sell them the call?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just different ways you can play with these offers and how it dances with your product to really drive progress in your business, to really focus in on, this is the problem we solve. This is the unique way in which we solve it. I'm not going to spend all this time talking about my product line right now. Let's talk about your problem and what I can do to get you progress on your problem right now. Read this information, fill out this quiz, tell me some things about yourself, and then let's get on the phone for 15 minutes and we're going to knock out some of these problems. That kind of thing. I think that can be really effective, especially for sub $1 million businesses. Got a few more here, Ian. Related to a previous point that you made, I wrote down here, marketing funnel dynamics and metrics, or for whatever reason, I'm calling this knowing your mousetrap. Like you're building this little mousetrap that catches customers. And a lot of times we get involved in shiny objects when it comes to our funnels. But when we take a look at how people get into the mousetrap and we break it down and put numbers to each element to it. So, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it was really like a fluid process how they came in. It's like, really? It was fluid? Like going to an event's fluid? Going to people finding you on the web is fluid? What if it weren't fluid? What if it was a mousetrap that had a design and had a way of working and how it works? And I think it gets a lot easier to get to $1 million if you can really visualize how you get a customer.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the key levers? What are the numbers related to the levers? And then ultimately, how do we affect those numbers? So is it similar to the cash flow map at the core of your business? What does your funnel look like? A lot of people feel like they can't map out their funnel because there's some speculation there, or maybe it doesn't look like a guru's funnel. I actually think that's a thing, right? Because funnels are something that's talked about so often on the web. And if you don't get customers the way a guru gets customers, then you might think, well, there's no real funnel there.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we just need to change it to mousetrap, right? What is the way you get customers? Let's look at it as a system. Let's determine the numbers. And then ideally you would speed it up, right? That's the first thing you do in marketing. You don't go out and try to shout from the rooftops. The rookie thing is, I want more customers. Let's do shiny object. The pro thing is, I've got 20 customers. The next 10 are likely to come from the same source. How can we do it better, faster, stronger? That kind of thing.
And I think here is part of the trap, and not part of the good part of the trap, not the mouse trap. This is the trap, which is a lot of times these companies that are sub-$1 million, they figured out a way to get customers through an unreliable, non-scalable way. So they asked their dad's brother. He was their anchor client. He gave no referrals. Then it was their neighbor. She was a good client. Then it was somebody that you met at the gas station. All of a sudden, you got a $250,000 business, and there is no way for you to reliably find new customers. So that's like a trap, basically, which is like, I got here, I replaced my income, I don't have any job anymore, but I never really had to find customers. I just did like the friends and family round of finding customers. And now, again, related to some of the points we made up above, is I don't have money to acquire customers. I haven't built a funnel. I don't know how it works. So if you're relying on some of these relationships early on in the business to build the business, I think that's fine. But you got to price it in. You got to figure out a way to go find customers, to be able to afford customers. And like you're saying, build a mousetrap, a funnel to get these customers. Otherwise, there's no hope in getting past $1 million.
There we go. We'll give it credit for point number 8, a reliable source of new customers. You build your mousetrap, and then you got to figure out where you're going to place it. Again, if there's not like a clear answer to all these questions, that's an interesting exploration. These are things that $1 million businesses often have figured out. We got 2 more here, Ian. One is an interesting concept. I'm just going to call it like one key hinge metric. What is the most important related metric to revenue in your business? And we've been talking a lot about services businesses today. For a lot of services businesses, they sell on the phone. So here's some math that I find useful. If you're doing $20,000 a month in revenue and you do 5 sales calls a month, then you can do the math that, well, 5 calls is worth $20,000 in revenue, right? Because this is what the pipeline looks like. I'm getting $20,000 a month because I'm doing 5 sales calls. That's how I fill the pipeline. Well, now we have a pretty interesting picture on how to get to $40,000 a month. What do you think that picture is?
Not SEO, not paid ads, not trade shows necessarily, unless it's part of your funnel. It's getting on the phone more often.
There you go. And if your goal is to get to 40, and then your goal is to get to 83, which is what we're talking about, what if I just did 20 calls a month? And that's a hypothesis that you can pursue, you can define, and you can figure out whether it's correct or not. But why isn't there a world where you can do 20 calls a month? Mm-hmm. Would that be a reliable way? And this is, again, can you boil your business down to one key hinge metric, one key constraint, that if that number goes up, the revenue goes up? And now we can use all these tools, right? The resonant offer. What's my offer? Call, right? Because if I go from 5 to 10 calls, that's worth an extra $20,000 every month in the business. And so it allows you, when you're in a phase where you have limited resources, to really focus on a key growth hypothesis in the company versus this smorgasbord of growth things that you're talking about that may or may not work out. You have the information right there. There's this action is leading to revenue. How do we double the action?
And it's not to say that you're going to have not more than one metric in your business that matters, but we actually sat down and did this exercise during our H2 meeting the other day. What are the 3 key metrics in the business that we care about? That's on the top level. And then, of course, there's other metrics down below in the different departments that are going to help to lead to those 3 key metrics.
Right.
But I think like sub-million, you can start with 1, 2, or 3, something small, because everybody likes to describe everything as the most important thing in their business, especially in smaller companies. They're like, oh, it's really important that I go to this trade show, and it's really important that I join this community. It's really important that I have my PPC up. And wait a second.
What's that one thing?
What's the one thing? I understand that you might have to do all those things to lead to that one thing. And then we might say like, all those things are too expensive. You can't do all those things. But what is the one thing that leads to the business growth?
Yep. And it really simplifies things because now we can do ROI calcs on what we can spend to get a call. And the whole system starts to unfurl from the simplicity. And honestly, there could be an emotional component to this too. The bravery of choosing something that could be wrong, right?
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible.
You have to choose. We were debating about a key new metric for H2. And there's this moment when you're like looking at it and you're like, is that really it? You know what I mean? It's like a little bit easier just to have the whole dashboard gauges. But to have that one thing that you're like, I guess I need to know. Yeah, you need to know. You need to know if that metric is leading to growth or not. And you're going to be wrong sometimes. You got to stick your neck out for it and risk your time to pushing that hypothesis to its end, to figuring out when the system breaks down. And it's a way to get in touch with reality that when you're investing in shiny object stuff, yeah, it just keeps going. You don't really ever need to find out. And sometimes there's something comforting about that. All right, Ian, one more here to get to 10. I'm going to choose patching the leaky boat. So canceling the credit cards, taking a look, especially, Felix Dennis said, overhead walks on two legs, taking a look at your composition of your team, of your expenses, and asking this specific question. What is the capital return profile on this investment, right? What is the ROIC on this investment? Are these dollars foot soldiers in my quest to return more dollars? And try to do it in a way, when we say leaky, that's not hand wavy. People tend to be pretty sloppy actually about future investments. Mm-hmm. And to get to a million, you're going to move faster if that money's working harder for you. And so this is why we have the maps. When you're putting that money into the things you already do well, to speed them up, to make them move faster, the money comes back faster. And it's really critical that you focus those investments, especially pre-1 million. And it's a hard thing to do, that you're going to have to continue to reevaluate how you spend this money. A lot of times we can splash out on things, we hope it pays off or whatever. And it's actually to sit down. What would it need to bring back? What's the time frame it would need to bring back? And how does that compare to the other places we can put that capital to work? I think especially pre-1 mil, and this is something that we struggle with too, Ian, in terms of just, you mentioned there's like entrepreneurship, there's business ownership, and then there's a third piece, which is being an investor. Mm-hmm. And part of getting leverage and scale is putting capital to work for you.
Yep.
One of the best ways to have scale in a business isn't necessarily to have a quote scalable model. You know the most scalable model? Capital. If you have margin, then you can use capital to scale. And the question is, how well are you using it? And do you know the character of the investments you're making? So that's my kind of point about patching the leaky boat, taking a look at how your money is working for you in your business.
Yeah, Dan, just to echo that point, the entrepreneur portion of this is the bravery. And at some point, we all took that leap. We all got brave one day and made a decision.
We crossed the Rubicon.
Exactly. We have to cross the Rubicon. You have to be brave. That's going to happen multiple times in this business. But the moment, like you said, that it becomes a financial instrument and then you become an investor in your business, you have to start to learn how these tools work. And I think this is one of the things that they don't teach you how to do this in most schools that I think a lot of us went to. This is something that you have to learn on the fly. You have to read Greg Crabtree. You have to find your source for the information here to understand how to operate these businesses as a financial instrument. You're right. It is the reason a lot of people never really make it past a million, is because they're not looking at it from that perspective. They keep trying to do entrepreneurial things in their organization and they're not looking at the scoreboard to see if it's working, and they're not looking at their money to see if it's working for them.
Cool. And then, I mean, I think the interesting thing about capital and why it's such a great tool for scale is that it can be used in so many different ways, that there is an opportunity cost to every dollar that goes out the door. So if you can audit that and say, it's going to pay off, is it going to pay off as well as that thing that's already paying off? Because you should figure out the limit to your investment there. So the more disciplined you can be about ROIC before a million, the faster you're going to get there. Cool. We got a bunch of things, Ian. We could probably list 20 more here. I think the idea is like, These are some key exercises that most of which are affordable to do in terms of your time. And hopefully they can jog up some thinking about how to accelerate your progress to 1 million and beyond. So that's it. I know you got a date with the gelato shop, man. We can't keep recording this podcast. We got to get going.
They already recognize us. I'm a valued customer and I will be going there soon.
Yeah, they don't have a loyalty card. They don't have a subscription, but it doesn't matter. They got a tailwind, man.
They got tailwind and they got a resident offer as far as I'm concerned.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for joining me and we'll see you next Thursday morning.
See you then.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Tropical MBA podcast. You can go to tropicalmba.com, get access to hundreds of back episodes and all kinds of other goodies. Load up your iPod. That is the cheapest way to fly business class on your next international flight. We will see you next Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.